We are the mothers of many, Kiara Evans and Lorna Blanchard. As mothers of many children, we are curious about our parenting journeys. We were called to document this poignant time of mothering in our lives. We feel passionately that women's stories should be heard.
So at the end of last episode, we said that this time we're going to talk about survival mode and what that looks like for us. When did we realise that we were in survival mode? And now what tools and techniques that we have in our arsenal, shall we say, of how to navigate that when it comes up for us. So survival mode, what are your tells?
I think for me, the first thing to say is I don't think I knew I was in survival mode when I was in survival mode. And then I look back on, like we were talking about at the beginning of the introduction episode, of kind of going, oh wow, we had a lot of kids very close together, very young ages. That was only survival. That was the day-to-day grind of changing nappies, making sure everyone was fed, trying to get people to sleep. That was just literally baseline level of survival. I think baseline level of everyone's human functioning. That's all we could achieve.
I've heard someone describe that phase of having really young kids as being like in the trenches.
Yeah.
Like that bit of parenting where you have a lot of kids close together.
Yeah.
Which I feel is quite common now to do that.
Yeah.
I feel like...
cram them all in.
Yeah, lots of people have them close together. I think it's related to a lot of factors, like some being the age at which we have kids, some being that we oftentimes now have more money than people did in the past, that we can do that. Mm-hmm. Also that we are fitting it in around having careers as women. There's just so many factors. But I feel like having lots of children close together, like three or more, is quite more common than when I was a child. Like my mum was quite unusual to have three kids under five.
Right. Yeah. I remember a lot of my friends were one or two, a brother and a sister, the end. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yeah.
often like 3 years between them or whatever.
Yeah, you know, like... exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But that for me was survival mode. And I think...
what did it look like day to day? Like what do you feel like were the things that now you look back and go, that was because I was surviving, not thriving?
Making a cup of tea and eating five biscuits, chain eating five biscuits. Mm-hmm. Standing in the lounge with a baby strapped to me, eating cake as a lot of food was my survival. Mm-hmm. Trying to fill my days with something, play groups, walks, events. And I remember when Bethany and Luke were little, maybe Samuel was there as well, writing almost lesson plans for the day of like, this is the theme that my babies needed to have. We would do, you know, I'd have Pinterest boards of the autumn theme will be, and the activities that we're going to do are this. And then structuring my day to have, we would have an outing at some point and then we would do something else structured in the afternoon. And that wasn't me thriving, that was me panicking in survival mode, trying to have some kind of grasp on the day. That for me is survival mode, that panic, that feeling of desperately paddling, you know, underwater, like not being okay, but on the top going, yeah, I've got this all under control. It's the nail varnish again, right? What we were talking about, but you know, yeah. That was survival mode for me, eating a lot of cake and trying to plan a day.
Because when we met, I had a very small baby. I had a 4-month-old and it was my first baby, and you held a sling library session in Chelmsford that I came to with a friend. And I remember you walking in with these three kids, one of probably Samuel strapped to your back, going like, oh my God, I've met her. I've met the woman I'm going to be.
Oh my God, that's terrifying. That.
Yeah, but you, like the way you have relayed that experience is so different to what I saw.
Wow.
For me, it was like, this woman not only has three kids with her, she's running this sling library. I'm sat there with my first baby thinking, oh, I don't know how I'm going to get through this day. Like, she doesn't like being put down. I hate it. Yeah. I hate her touching me all the time. Like, I had all these feelings about how I wasn't functioning as a mother.
Yeah.
And then I saw this mother walk in with like all these kids. Like, she had it. Like, that's what I wanted. I wanted what you had.
So funny, isn't it, looking at other people and going, oh, they've got it all. And I remember those Sling Library sessions just feeling so much stress and so much panic, because it would mean ignoring the kids for the 2 hours. It would mean knowing that one of the kids at least would kick off. It would be giving them an iPad and hoping that they would just sit under the table on the iPad. It would be knowing that they would need me, of course, because my attention was on someone else. And trying to go, oh, look, I'm being really helpful to this mother who's come who needs me as a Sling Library person and my kids who need me as well. And it was just really stressful. That was survival, I think, as well. Just so stressful.
The thing is, what you were trying to achieve and what you do achieve in your business all the time is that you would like to support mothers to help their mothering journey be something that they don't have to live in survival mode for.
Yeah.
You know, like your intention of the entire process was so, what's the word? Like pure.
Because motherhood is so hard. And I just, do you know what? I was listening to a podcast the other day and it's a husband and wife duo talking about running, obviously, again. And they just had their first child. And the introduction to this podcast was, we've just had him. Baby Leo's lying next to us asleep. We're so happy. This is so wonderful. This is so easy. And I just was like, what?
Wow.
Like, do some people find this easy? Is this easy for some people? Yeah. Or are they lying?
No,
what's happening? Yeah. I just thought they were talking bullshit. And then thought maybe some people. But for me, or maybe the people that I attract,
yeah,
it's not easy. This is really hard.
And I think there's a lot to be said for the fact that what some people find easy, other people find hard. You know?
Right.
Because I was having a conversation yesterday with someone about bedtime. Mm-hmm. And I do bedtime by myself. And I pretty much always have done with 4 kids. Occasionally, I'm not on my own. And they were saying, you know, that they were really struggling because they didn't have someone there at bedtime with their children. And I understand why that's hard, because they often have 2 people there and 2 children, 1 each. Mm-hmm. And like, yes, that, you know, when you then don't have the thing. But it's all about perception, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, the perception you have of the situation is different, dependent on your circumstances.
Yeah.
So, like, the perception of what survival mode you're in is dependent on what it looks like for you to be thriving and what it feels like to you to not be thriving.
That's so interesting. So, what's, for you, what was survival mode?
Definitely some cake thrown in. I remember a lot of cake. I think I've talked before on a podcast about scones. I ate a lot of scones with, like, laden with things.
Yeah.
They were my thing that I was like, if I can't have anything else, I can have those 2 scones at like 3 o'clock and feel, you know, like I've had that thing for me.
Desperately clutching to something just for you. That's what the 5 biscuits was for me.
Because I didn't know how to make space for that in my life whilst mothering.
Yeah.
I now know a little bit more about how to create that space whilst my children are around me.
That's so interesting, yeah.
Because I think then I didn't understand why I was expected to be selfless. Because I have, on the narcissistic traits of life, I would say that I have a few. And I'm owning that, and I know that now, and I can sense in a way when I'm trying to prioritize my needs above everybody else's, and I can feel it coming in, and I can recognize that that's where I'm going with it. So when I was unconsciously scrabbling to still have what I would deem as a successful day, I was like, it was to the detriment. It would be either to the detriment of my kids or to myself. And now I'm realizing that both parties can thrive and have time for themselves within that day, regardless of, you know, someone's needs trumping somebody else's needs.
But we've had this conversation before, though, haven't we? Of kind of going, how do you, as a mother, have time for yourself whilst not being selfish? And then it kind of goes around full circle of, if you are not having time for yourself, then you don't have time for your kid, and it becomes a horrible vicious cycle if you don't stop it somewhere. But I think you can't do that when you're in survival mode.
No.
You can't, because everything's too heightened. You're too stressed out. You're too
Nothing
panicky,
feels enjoyable,
whatever.
Does it?
Yeah, exactly.
You can't have enjoyment. If your nervous system is running in a survival mode, you are constantly fighting a fire that is trying to warn you that it's in danger.
Yeah.
Of, like, self-destruction. Like, that's ticking along in the background. And until you tap into that source of that fire, or even recognise that it's there, you can't even begin to, like, do anything to make yourself feel better.
Yeah.
And I still, like, I still have survival mode now.
Yeah.
Like, this is not us saying we've cured all of our, we're fully healed, that's it, tick, move on.
Yeah, once you've left the fourth trimester of your last child, you will regain, you know, some semblance of sanity. No. But I think, I guess what I would love to say to other mothers is almost, if you feel that you're in survival mode, whatever that looks like for you, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a real thing to be in survival mode. And then when you're in survival mode, the idea of doing anything else is impossible. And almost to take that pressure off yourself and go, do you know what? I'm just in survival mode, either today or for this period of my life. And maybe those people that I'm listening to on that podcast saying that those early days are easy is because for them, they aren't fighting it. I think I fought everything. You know, the laying the baby down was stressful, the sleeping, the breastfeeding, the everything was stressful. Whereas if I just kind of submitted to it, maybe it wouldn't have been so triggering and so stressful. Whereas, yeah.
Also, I think, you know, having my first baby and then my fourth baby, my mindset of what I needed to do and didn't need to do for that tiny human was so different that, of course, the pressure was off a bit.
Yeah.
Because I knew that they sleep a lot.
Yeah.
And with your first baby, I mean, I've heard a lot of mothers say their babies don't sleep a lot. And every time I've seen them, their baby's sleeping because they're not actually present, not by any fault of theirs, just that they cannot be present to see that their baby is actually asleep. And the times they're remembering are those hideous points throughout the day where the baby is not sleeping. And yes, there can be some very grumpy babies out there. They're born with, like, many reasons to cry, and that's, you know, part of getting a baby that's unsettled or not unsettled or whatever. But yeah, I think it's some to do with confidence in how to actually care for babies, because how many of us have had a baby without any idea of how to look after one? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think when we got married, there was a marriage lesson that we were supposed to go to and we didn't go to, managed to get out of it. I don't know if they cover babies in that, but I doubt it. And then apart from just, you know, watching the TV, which is totally unrealistic, we don't know how to look after infants. We haven't been in families with 10 kids where you're part of a lineup of 10 and you see the mother look after the babies. That's not how life works.
This is for me, the bonkers idea that we've got no one to learn from anymore. Yeah. That we've got, where are we learning how to change a nappy? And where are we learning the techniques? And actually, I knew how to change a nappy because I had a younger brother and I felt like that was it. I knew what I was doing. I'd done some babysitting. I knew.
Yeah. I'd looked after children for all of my working life.
Yeah.
And then I got a baby.
What we were doing. Yeah. I remember coming home from an antenatal class. And I remember sitting in the car next to CJ saying two things. And the first one was, I think I'll be fine during labour, because they told us something like, if you can just focus on the pain is just in your stomach and, you know, I can focus on the fact that my little finger doesn't hurt, I'll be okay. I was not okay. It wasn't like that. And I then also remember saying to CJ that sleepless nights will be totally fine as long as I can just go back to sleep again afterwards. I'll be okay with broken sleep. And of course, my first child slept. She was awake and asleep in 3-hour chunks. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter what time of day it was, she was awake for 3 hours in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. I was not okay.
No.
That was not what I had agreed to or thought was going to happen.
No,
terrible.
No, and I think that goes back, doesn't it, to what are you doing in those moments to survive? So survival mode for me links a lot to the lack of sleep.
Yeah.
And I really struggled with it. I didn't know, actually, no, I probably did know how much I loved sleep. Because even before I had children, I'd go to bed at 9 o'clock and sleep through till like 6 or 7 in the morning. Mm-hmm. So I think I've always known that I'm a person who needs a lot of sleep. I didn't know what baby sleep realistically looked like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think I knew that I'd have to feed them in the night. Mm-hmm. I think I knew that when I had my first one, but I didn't know how often, and that it was me feeding them in my case.
Yeah.
And that then when you laid them down, they didn't just go back to sleep.
Oh my God.
So there's all these, like, and so I would be Googling stuff in the middle of the night. I'd watch like endless police shows on my TV that I had in my bedroom. And I would Google stuff just to like make myself, I think, try and calm my nervous system. I don't know what I was looking for, but I was looking for any answer that I could find as to why this
is normal.
Yeah. I mean, the first baby for me brought some really dark times, like really dark. Some talk of suicide and just general distress at my situation and finding, and that was just me crying out for like, help me.
Yeah.
But I didn't at that point have a support network of women. I didn't have a support network. I had my mum and I could ring her. I don't think I shared with her the like pure depths of my despair. That was just safe for my husband. and I didn't even talk to the other women who had babies because I was like, they might take the baby away from me if I speak about this to people. So instead of speaking about it, what I did, the same as you, I found things to do all day, every day. I'd be drinking coffee in the park at 9 a.m. with my baby in a buggy, just so that I didn't have to be in the house with her. I would like buy food just so that I could eat anything when I got home. I'd sometimes walk to the station to get my husband from the station just so that she napped in the buggy and I didn't have to hold her. Survival mode was anything other than having to hold her in my arms for a lot of the time. So I just found that too much. It was too much to hold her and have her use me for a comfort. Partly, I think, due to the fact that I thought it would mean that she'd do it forever and I couldn't cope with it. And then my second baby, all I did was hold her.
Aww.
Because I met everyone from the sling library and I learned a different way. It's okay. I think I just softened a bit to it, you know?
Yeah.
I softened a lot. So, yeah, it was survival mode was definitely to do with food. It was definitely to do with unconscious like projection onto other people's situations. Everyone was doing it slightly better, had better clothes for their baby, had nicer things, had a more responsive partner in their world. Like everything was about lack for me, like finding the lack in my situation and seeing abundance in everybody else's.
That's really heavy and really hard, isn't it? But I think I would also say there were some really dark times when I had Bethany. I remember when she was a couple of weeks old, and I remember turning to CJ and saying, "You can go if you want to. You deserve better than this." And I was like, "That's it. Just leave. You should leave us." I remember he went down to get the bins one day because we lived in a flat at the time, and he took a couple of extra minutes, and I thought he'd gone. I thought that was it. He had gone. It was, and I think like deep, really horrible, dark feelings are probably more common than we let on. And like I didn't tell anybody. Mm. Why would you tell people that kind of stuff?
Well, the thing is, we wouldn't tell people. This is something came to mind earlier about this as well, is that it's about the persecution of women.
Yeah.
And to tell someone that you feel suicidal when you have a small baby in our society equals let's take that baby away in our heads. Whether that happens or not is not really relevant. It's like the persecution of women tells you in centuries gone by that any kind of chink in the armor or in air quotes madness leads to you having your baby taken away.
Or I think for me, that I failed as a mother, that the expectation is that you are full of joy and happiness and it's easy. And when you were talking about knowing that you liked sleep, I always think that people feel they have to justify the fact that they want to sleep.
Yeah.
And that the world's like, oh, you're not like Margaret Thatcher. You can't function and run a country on 3 hours sleep. How selfish are you? You want to sleep and you've got a baby? Yeah. And actually, yeah, I just need to sleep. That's a human thing to do. And yet, it's almost like the world wants us to be in panic survival mode as mothers, maybe because it keeps us in a box, keeps mothers downtrodden.
Oh, it women makes downtrodden. A lot of money.
Yes, because then you can
buy things
to get your baby gadget, right?
And I'm not saying that some of these things are not great tools to have in your toolkit. Like if your kid likes Sean the Blimmin' Sheep, whatever it is that tweets all night, then buy the thing. But yeah. You know, there's a difference between understanding that like you're in a mode of survival and you're about to purchase something or eat something or whatever out of pure stress.
Yes.
Or just blindly going around doing anything that will work and not maybe looking deeper for a second to think, okay, this is what is happening.
Yeah.
How is my body feeling today?
Yeah. And for me, there's a difference between numbing in survival mode, which to me is the eating the cake. Or buying something or desperately scrabbling around the internet for an answer that is outside of me.
Mm-hmm.
Toolkit for me is actually just to go, this is probably normal. Take a deep breath and it's okay. Mm. That's really hard to do. And last night, I was in survival mode last night because I was fretting about needing to do all the jobs. Bethany was out. Someone needed to go and get Bethany. All the things, my foot was a bit sore, so I was stressing about that. And then Anna wouldn't go to sleep. And at 9 o'clock, she kept coming back downstairs and I went into the lounge. And I went to CJ, I don't know what to do. What am I meant to be doing in this moment? I don't want you to go and shout at her, but what am I meant to go and do? Like, I'm back in that I don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
What? She's six. How do I still not know what I'm doing? How am I still in friggin' survival mode? When someone triggers something, because it's really hard.
Because in that moment, you felt like you needed to do everything.
All the things.
And you didn't know how to focus in on the one thing you needed to do.
And I think that's where it's similar to like the early stages of parenting for me, or when a baby is young, because it was the same every time because I didn't learn the lessons. That feeling of complete overwhelm of responsibility is when it triggers survival mode for me. So when Bethany was first born, I remember just feeling completely overwhelmed with the idea that I was the only person that could feed this baby. And obviously that's not true because bottles exist. But for me, it was overwhelming. And all I could think was like, what if I die? Or what if I get carted off to prison or something awful like that? How would this child survive? I just need to get through these first 9 months of exclusively feeding her. And then it doesn't matter what happens to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that overwhelm of responsibility is when I get triggered into survival mode. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. There's like a massive difference, isn't there, in cultural understanding of having a baby.
Mm.
Because when I speak to women from other cultures, this like transition into motherhood feels so much more nurturing.
Right.
Like both yours and mine experiences are quite similar, considering we probably had a very different life.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, like we felt like we were doing it all by ourselves.
Yeah.
Alone.
Yeah.
Like my mum worked full time when I had my eldest. Yeah. So I saw them, you know, occasionally, my parents, and my husband works in London, so we don't see him for a majority of the week. So it was me and this small infant every day on our own.
Yeah.
I didn't feel that sense of like nurturing community. And also, I don't think at that point I would have accepted it either.
Oh, interesting.
Because I didn't know, but subconsciously I think I did, because the first thing I did was find friends.
Mm.
I didn't do NCT or anything. So the first thing I did was like, there was a woman who lived down my street who walked past my house with a baby all the time. We ended up being friends because I was like, I looked out the window, saw her and went, I think we need to be friends because she has a baby and she looks like someone I'd be friends with. Done.
Yeah.
And then we formed a great friendship, which is how I've, you know, met you and other people. But it was me actively having to create that. I'm a person who is confident and enjoys the company of other people, is sociable, have the luxury of understanding people and situations and wanting to be part of it. And that drove me to create that community, around myself that I now have and have had since that point, really, where it didn't feel like I was in it alone. But I think lots of mothers don't have that confidence to find like the community.
Hmm.
And that makes me really sad because it can be so lonely just being at home. Especially, I think, if you're going back to work after a year. I think a lot of people have said to me, oh, I don't see any point in making friends because I'm going to be going back to work. A year is a really long time to be at home with a baby, isn't it?
And then you spend the whole of your motherhood reinventing the wheel. Mm. And in the middle of the night Googling things, going, is this normal? Is this what I should be doing? Am I doing it right? When actually, if you had, I don't know, elders to learn from, for a friendship group and network where everyone's talking about it, and actually the sting is taken out of the worry, because everyone's baby does that. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, you can be on WhatsApp in your community group, yeah, saying like, this is happening, is this, yeah, normal? But that's a luxury, isn't it?
I remember my in the car park in the hospital after we had Bethany, and already by like day two breastfeeding was horrendously painful. And I remember my sister-in-law going and getting nipple shields from Mothercare, which was like right by the hospital. And she handed them to me, and I just looked at her and went, it hurts so much. And she said, I know, pet, I know. And I just, in that moment, felt really like seen.
Yeah.
But then I couldn't, because she was busy, and she, you know, and that network didn't grow. And it's so hard, isn't it, to have that network of support.
But also, I think there's an element there to, that is our responsibility for ourselves.
Mm.
And it comes down to me for like noticing when, with the survival mode thing and all of this, is noticing myself for myself and prioritizing myself to say, you're in survival mode. What are you doing to soothe yourself? Like,
yes,
are you creating safety for your body and yourself? Yeah. And it might not be for everyone that you need to go to play group and make friends. It might be that you are a very solitary human being, and it might be that you just need to like read a book when your baby is sleeping. It might be a very, yeah, different experience for you. But unless you take the time to notice the behaviours you have and how many of them are conscious and how many of them are just ploughing through the day waiting for it to be over, you change anything.
That, I think, is a red flag for survival mode, waiting for the day to be over. Yeah. That's a really good... I recognise that in a lot of days.
Oh, same. Waiting for bedtime. I've had a lot of women say to me, like, oh, I know one of my friends lays out her pyjamas on the bed, like, in the morning, so that she knows they're there, ready for her. But the day will be over. And I can totally relate to that. Some, yeah, days just really need to be over. But I think what I want to create for my family is more days that I am aware and engaged and grateful for what is unfolding. My aim is to try and create that for myself, to not wish the days away, but also to be aware that sometimes I need to wish them away.
It's not all hunky-dory perfect all the time. But I think, yeah, that's such a lovely intention. And maybe the person on the podcast saying that it's easy to have a baby, maybe that is a possibility. If you have a network of support, if you've got stuff in place, maybe it is meant to be beautiful and lovely and wonderful. And at the moment, we just have a society that's a bit wonky and broken, where there isn't support networks. We don't have family nearby, or we don't have a family that's able to be around, present, whatever's going on.
I think deeper than that, it's more about, as mothers, and maybe fathers, but I'm speaking mainly to mothers here. I'm a woman and I relate to women in this sense. What I want is for women to understand that they can empower themselves to create that for themselves. And yes, you may have been dealt like a rubbish lot as far as what you have been given to raise your baby in. What you do with that can be shifted into something better for yourself, whether it be tiny elements of like what you eat or what you watch, what you listen to, like the things you consume throughout the day, all day, until as women we wake up and go, I deserve more than just this shitty thing I was dealt. Not the baby, the situation. The baby is always a blessing. It's the situation around it. Until women can take that ownership of that situation and say, like, I want better for me, and I'm going to get it by doing this. And it takes like a lot, I think, to dig into that place.
But it's almost like there's two different types of survival mode then for me. Like it's the survival mode of just simply functioning through having small children.
Mm-hmm.
That is, their needs are fairly basic. And so it is just kind of literally like human survival, feed, eat, sleep, change, whatever. Versus what you were just saying. But for me, sometimes survival mode is when I'm completely forgetting that I have agency in my own life to like choose something a bit different than just panic, than fear and anxiety. And I need someone or, I don't know, a moment to just almost remind myself that it can be different, that I have to take a bit of control in the situation and kind of take a step back and go, how can we do this differently that doesn't just involve me panicking about everything?
I think sometimes we do that for each other, don't we?
Yeah, definitely.
Sometimes we text and go, I need to, so varying levels of things, but sometimes I need to rant.
Can I
rant at you? Sometimes it's, what's your perspective on this?
Yeah.
Because often if you ask somebody else to look in, and someone trusted, someone who's safe to you and emotionally on your side, that's very important to do. Not just anyone. It has to be someone who is in your corner.
Yeah.
When you say to them, what is your perspective on this situation? Sometimes that can just help you, guide you to where you're doing something that suggests that you're in survival mode.
Yeah. And or that when you're in just like, you know, the real blunt end of survival mode of, I've texted you and I've gone, we're all vomiting. Okay. That is survival mode. There's nothing good is going to come from today other than you have full permission to go lie down on the sofa and be in survival mode. That is it. If you can drink something today, that's a win.
Yeah.
That's all you can do.
Yeah.
There's no deeper meaning that needs to be learnt from this.
No.
We just need to literally
survive.
Some
days are like that.
Yeah. And could be periods of time when, you know, especially if you've got a newborn and a toddler and a preschooler or whatever combination it is.
It can be so hard to remember when things like that happen that that's where you've gone as well. Like we recently had a bereavement in our family, and when I was chatting to people, they would remind me, like, you're going through a really emotional time right now. And yeah. I'd be like, oh yeah. Because the nature of kids is that you just do the next day.
Yeah.
Like, I suppose when you don't have children, you in some ways have that, I say luxury because it doesn't seem like a luxury to me, but you have that time to process stuff in a quieter, I guess, and maybe drawn out process.
Yeah.
But with small children, they wake up and they still want their breakfast at 5 a.m. and they still poke you in or tap you in the face like Anna does. Or like whatever it is they do, they still want that and they need that and they still have to have those things. Their routine stays the same. Everything continues. And all the while you are processing things on top of all of that. And that's when sometimes it takes another person to say, oh, you're actually going through a lot right now.
Yeah.
But I think those conversations need to happen more between women.
Yeah.
And people need to find other women to have them with together.
Yeah.
In kitchens.
Yes.
And other places in the park. Or
exactly. Because there's more than just survival. I remember that, whichever podcast it was definitely a Glennon podcast. And she said, I think there was a question and it was something along the lines of, you know, how do I get on the journey of like soul CPD, and she but I've got really young children, and she said at the moment all you need to do is just remember that you have a soul. It doesn't need to be anything more than that. And I was like, oh, that's nice. Okay, that is enough work for today.
Just for a reference point, that was Glennon Doyle that we spoke about in the last podcast. She wrote a book called Untamed that I think both of us would agree was like a massive book. When Kiara had read it, she texted me and she went, we need to meet up, I've got notes,
a list of questions. Maybe actually you were just saying a minute ago before we started recording, what was the turning point for you to realize maybe reading Untamed was one of those turning points for me.
Okay.
I really struggled with the idea of being mother and figuring out my own shit, and how the two things how do you give everything of yourself at the same time as loving yourself and being selfless and selfish at the same time? How do you bring those two things together? That was a massive issue I had with Untamed, and maybe a big turning point for like trying to figure this stuff out for me.
I feel like we need to read that book again. I feel like I need to read it now because it was so huge. I think we need to do an episode also on books we read. Both of us are really into non-fiction, would we say?
Like, I don't remember the last time I read a storybook.
Yeah, I do like novels, but we tend to read non-fiction books about self-help, parenting. Yes. Self-help, that's such a horrible
phrase. Isn't it awful?
Phrase about insights into the human condition. We love to read about the human condition and what that everything that that entails. And it's one of our geek off passions. I mean, you have many geek off passions.
I do.
Star Trek.
Proper nerd. Really.
So do I, but they're just different.
Like, I want to be. My dream is like to sit. I texted you the other day, didn't I? Sit in a chair with like arty farty clothes on, whatever that even means.
Yes.
But also watching Star Trek and learning about, I don't know,
astrology,
rocket theory or something at the same time. Yeah,
you should.
What
have
a
that.
Strange mixture of things.
Yeah, but why not? Like, why
a hippie,
not?
A hippie Trekkie.
When you were in survival mode, though, did you know any of those things about yourself?
No,
you just thought that you had to get the job done.
Yeah, and I remember CJ a few times would say to me when I was in the deep dark depths of survival mode. He would say things like, "When was the last time you got the telescope out? Get the telescope out and look at the stars." Like, I needed some awe and wonder in my life. Life, rather than just nappy changing and feeding and sleep schedules. Have some joy. What sparks you? What brings you happiness? Do that.
I've definitely had to relearn that for myself, because before kids it was work, and work was a passion of mine. I was a primary school teacher, so my job, although it was hugely stressful, and now when I think about the stress I put on myself about it, was too much, but I loved it as well. So that took up a lot of my creative time.
Yeah.
Like, I loved creating things for my class. So I did a lot of my interests through that. But now I think I had to relearn what my passions and interests were whilst being under all of the children as well, you know, and like look at it again and go, oh, actually, what do you love? What do you enjoy? And what does light you up? But yeah, what did you asked me before about
the turning point. When did you start to kind of realise you were in survival mode, or how to?
Well, I think there's two factors. With my third child, I had a near death, makes it sound so deep, but I felt like I had a near death experience.
I think it was pretty big.
I mean,
wasn't it?
I did ask the midwife afterwards, and they said that it wasn't that bad. So,
okay.
But this was a midwife who'd never given birth. So, you know, I have thoughts on that too. To me,
So many thoughts.
And I don't think her opinion is less valid. I just think that she doesn't know what it feels like to push a baby's head out of her vagina as well. So, you know, like, there's an element there of like, actually, I had a cesarean with my first baby, and then I had a textbook vaginal delivery with my second baby. And then my third baby, I had, in my words, a near-death experience. She was born in 50 minutes from start to finish.
At home,
kind of by accident, but not, with a doula who just made it, and a midwife, and Gary, my husband. And her head is on the 98th centile. And there's so many theories, none of which are medically validated. But I feel like my body literally just got her out as quick as possible because it knew it was going to really struggle. And then the placenta didn't come out, and it was a very stressful scenario of people pounding on my belly and massaging, trying to get the placenta out. There was blood everywhere. In the moment, it just felt epic. And whilst delivering her, I left my body and I viewed myself from above. And I also left my body a couple of times after that. After everyone had left, and it was just me and the midwife and the baby, Willow, my third one. And then I went to hospital and left my body again. And anyway, I came back in, and I felt like, and then she was a really difficult baby. She was so hard. She was nothing like the other two. And I went through a year of struggle, resistance and pain, like emotional pain, to accept that her and I needed to learn a different way of being together than I had with my other children. So anyway, long story short, that happened, and it meant I maybe had a slightly different view on life, but it was a slow burner. Then we had like a big event happen in our family that really rocked like my foundation of what I believed about myself and everything to do with who I was. And I started working with a coach, and she and I worked together on how I could develop tools to look after myself. Because before that point, I looked outward all the time of how to look after myself. And it brought me back inward to looking at how I could nurture myself for myself and not need other people to do that. So that was a massive turning point for me. And working with a coach for me has been transformative in lots of ways. It's just one of the many things that I do for myself, but it's a big thing. Mm. And it's one of the things I spend some money on, out of my family money, because it's made me more engaged with my children and myself. So that's when my turning point began. And from that point, I think everything has shifted, and like every single one of my relationships I feel like has had a shift. My friendships are more potent.
Good word.
Yeah. More connected, deeper. It's less of them.
I'm so glad I made the cut.
Don't. Oh, it wasn't even. It's just about growth. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Like the things that I want to connect with now are so different that it's changed how I want to be around people. And that can be huge, can't it? Yeah. And sometimes you grow together and sometimes you grow apart, and that is life. Yeah, that's that really. That felt like a lot of information.
That's how I came to the realisation of wanting to do more.
Yeah, just the realization of what I want to feel like in life. Because survival mode reminds me of how I did feel.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not happy.
Yeah.
And happiness is not my goal. Mm-hmm. Because we cannot be happy all of the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's as toxic as saying,
yeah,
I want to be sad all the time.
Yeah, 100%.
Because the range of human emotions that we have is so important. And when you're in survival mode, I feel like you don't have any emotion in a way.
Yeah, yeah. Or too much, and that's when I numb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And numbing still happens for me. Like, I've been drinking more recently, for definite. I mean, I say drinking, I never drink, so like one glass of wine to me feels like drinking more.
Yeah.
So I've been having
you text me last night, I'm on the wine and I like everything so much more. And I was like, oh, that sounds amazing. I could really get on the wine just to like everything more right now.
I definitely, and the thing is now I'm doing it, I'm like, oh, I'm really numbing out all of my feelings. This is great.
Consciously numbing. Is that better than unconsciously numbing? It's at least a step forward, isn't it?
I think so.
Yeah.
And also, there's a difference between, this is where nuance is just so important in life, isn't it? It's like me consciously numbing my existence, my bedtime existence, because that's what it was. I was like, bedtime sucks today. I just like really want a glass of wine because then I will be nicer to my children.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that I'm doing that to get that effect versus doing it every night, and then it's two glasses of wine, and then it's three, and then it's a bottle, and then it, you know, that's a very different experience. So I think whilst we are in a human body with a human existence, and we have had a human past where we are still unraveling all of the things that send us into survival mode or whatever, all of the outside factors as well, whilst we live in the situations we live in, those survival times are going to come right now.
And there's only so much that we can take before we do need to numb a little bit, be that the glass of wine or scrolling on Instagram or the five biscuits dunked in tea. There is an element of sometimes the brain just needs a little bit of a break.
And that's sitting on a mountain alone meditating for 3 hours is not an option for a mother of four.
No, no.
I mean, maybe it's for some mothers of four, but not in our situation.
I think I'd get bored.
I think I'd get bored. Yeah. At the moment, I think I would be very bored.
Yeah. I'd just start running up and down the mountain. Yeah. Something to do.
I definitely wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
That would definitely be what you would do.
I would probably
create some kind of a garden where I was sitting
Nice. Well, I'll run while you make a nice garden.
Yeah.
That sounds lovely.
But I think that's part of the reason, though, why we're in these survival modes, is that women are planted in houses alone,
mm-hmm.
because we've chosen that, like those are the choices we've made, And the situation that society has led us to is that we then end up holding a baby in a house on our own, planted in this place. And look at the creations that come from that. Mm. Like, huge, amazing things that women do, like making podcasts and other things, whilst they're at home alone or with friends. And, you know, until we unpick a little bit about why that is, like, why are we alone doing these things and having these responsibilities on our own, and like, how can we use that to create a better life for ourselves, there's going to be more and more survival mode.
Yeah.
And less connection to ourselves.
And it just strikes me that all the way along, kind of each different way that we're talking about survival mode, would everything would be so much easier if we had that community, had that nurturing of the mother at the forefront of things. If we had someone coming along when the baby was first born going, we've made you a week's worth of meals, here you go. Yeah, and then you wouldn't be stressing about, I've got to cook dinner for all the other children or for my husband or for myself or whatever. And then when we approach, I mean, I've got a teenager, I don't know what I'm doing. Where's my someone saying, oh, this is how we did it before. Yeah, it would all just be so much easier if we just had that community, that holding of the mother as well.
Yeah.
Instead, we do it for ourselves. Okay.
And there's things that seep in. Like, I have a neighbour down the road, wonderful ex-midwife called Teresa, who drops me random bits and bobs.
Aww.
Sometimes apples from the garden, which I love. But she often knits for my children. And I'm like, that's so beautiful. She never asks for anything for it. She just knits jumpers. And she's like, I love doing it. I love seeing them, like, she doesn't even care, actually, if she sees them in them. She just loves creating the jumpers. And she needs little people to wear them. And my kids wear her jumpers, and they love them. And it's really part of that network. And more of that is what we need.
Yeah.
You know, that has been so lost. And the sharing of tasks is lost when you are alone.
Yeah.
In your house with your kids. And that is something that I'm still working through, of how to ease that load as well.
I think the load is very heavy. And the load feels worse when you're in survival mode.
Yes.
For sure.
Yes.
And then the ability to say to someone, I'm in survival mode, please will you help me, is impossible. You can't say that to anybody because you don't see it.
Mm.
It's so hard.
Yeah, or you don't have the people in your life that can hear it and not get in it with you.
Yeah, or they say, put the baby down then. Leave them to sleep. I remember my grandma would just say to me, you need to come away, you need to put the baby down, and you need to come out for afternoon tea with me or something. I'm like, no, that's not what I need. I need someone to make me a cup of tea, hand me my baby and tell me it's going to be okay.
Yeah,
that's all.
Actually, that's like probably a good place to end. Maybe we can reflect on a few times in which when we were in survival mode, little moments like that people did things for us or supported us in a way that we weren't expected, and that really helped that ease. Like, I remember a Sling Library session where we all spoke about money openly.
Oh.
And it was really transformative for me, because in my world no one had talked about money openly. It was like a taboo subject, whatever. And I just remember it being like five or six of us talking about money and how the money comes into the family, how it's dealt out in your your own personal situations. And it felt so nurturing to like be around women who wanted to speak about these taboo things. So that for me was a really surprising way in which I then went home really liberated and started to, you know, think more deeply about that subject.
Good.
Still an ongoing subject.
Yeah, we should write that down. That should definitely, money needs to be there.
That's a heavy one.
I have, lots of stories. When did I feel, there was one time where you dropped off a meal at you just left it on the doorstep. It was jacket potatoes all wrapped up in foil and some kind of stew, I think.
I think you had Anna. I think it was after you had Anna.
Yeah, yeah. It was shortly after that I felt very nurtured in that moment, where someone else just took some of the load for a second of having to decide even what to cook for dinner that night. Was just, oh, I don't have to. That was really good, sharing the load.
I just had a lasagna dropped off after the bereavement. I had a giant lasagna dropped off by two dear friends, and I was like, and actually I texted them the morning of my daughter's fifth birthday party and said, I'm so sorry, I need to use this lasagna for her fifth birthday party. Is that okay? They were like, aww. Yeah, it's there to make your life easier. Yeah. If this is going to make your life easier, then do it. So it fed like 14 5-year-olds plus three adults. And amazing. It was like, brilliant.
I love how food is coming up quite often. I do think that should be another topic of conversation.
Food. Money, food. Who knows what you're going to be hit with next time. We'll have to hone it in on something that feels right. When it feels right, we'll record the next one about one of these subjects.
Yeah. I think for me, the conclusion is survival mode is real.
Mm.
Survival mode is about overwhelm, panic, numbing, desperately trying to remember that there's more to life and that there is more, that you don't have to be in survival mode the whole time.
Mm.
Yeah.
And to those women who are sat in their kitchens with their tiny babies, or wherever you might be, that survival mode is often due to circumstance. And as much as we can own it, you can still be in there for a bit, because it sometimes just helps pass the time along and the baby grows, and sometimes that eases it a little bit. But also, you do have a soul underneath all of the tasks of the day, and there will be a moment that you can grasp that helps you remember it. And there are, you know, we didn't talk much about the tools of things that we can do, but maybe I'll just end on a couple of things I find really helpful in my day to like remember that I have a soul. I like incense.
Mm.
I really love like a delicious smell in the house. So I always try and put some on if I'm at home. I have a hot drink that I sit down and drink without interruption. I tell my kids I am sitting down to drink this, and I will not get up until I'm finished unless there's an emergency. And I try to nurture myself with food as much as possible. And I chat with other women.
Mm-hmm.
That keeps me so level.
And they're actually quite basic things, like the senses, right? Mm. Food and smell and...
my own version of mindfulness.
Yeah. Do those things. I don't know what my tools are. I find it very easy to succumb to, I'll just throw myself into the pit of survival mode. Let's just get right into that pit of panic and not notice when I'm in it.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to get better at almost building things in, like those senses every day to just kind of hold me in sort of equilibrium. But if I can remember, say the other night I was having a massive panic about money. I think it was because of the car, and I text you and I text Dawn. Anyway, I was panicking about money and panicking at CJ. And in the end, I just kind of went, oh, forget it. I'll just stop panicking. And I went and drew on the window with some chalk pens. I made a wreath. And I was, and actually at the end of that, I was like, oh, I'm okay now. I could completely forgotten about what. I could think you'd text me later on in the evening going, are you all right? And I was like, why would she be asking me that?
Ah.
Oh, because I wasn't all right. Oh, I'm all right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like really basic. I need to,
That's big though, isn't something. It?
That,
like just doing something creative is nurturing to you.
Yeah, big
everyone
time.
Everyone has different things that are nurturing to them. Some people think running is nurturing. I think you're one of those people. I'm not one of those people. Some people go to yoga. Some people go to running. Some people go to drawing. Everyone has their different things that feel nurturing to them.
Yeah.
And... just trying to put some of those moments in the day of doing something that feels nurturing to yourself.
And if you're like me, where you go, well, I can't possibly do anything nice for myself unless everything is perfect and in a row.
Yeah.
You have to then put it in somewhere formally. Like, this is the point in the day when I always do this thing.
Yeah.
So that you've got it in there. Otherwise, you just throw yourself into the pit of survival mode.
And it can be easy to ignore that and not actually do it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Have a nice mug and a nice drink. There you go.
The next one should be on hot drinks.
Hot drinks. Okay. Good.